Welcome to the Chengdu Living Podcast. My name is Charlie. I'm here with Eli Sweet and Sasha Matuzak, both of which are writers on the site. This is the first podcast. Today we have a few topics we'll be talking about, some of which we've discussed on the site and some we haven't. First thing we want to talk about is hot pot oil, also known as cancer oil in Chengdu. So why don't you tell me a little bit about what you've heard about that, Sasha?
About a week ago, the stories first came out in Chinese media oil that was used for hot pot and that consumers were getting, when they ordered their hot pot, was coming from was recycled pig oil. The same type of oil they would use to feed the pigs.
Right.
So like when they go to shops and they pick up big barrels of oil, instead of taking them to the pig places where they should, instead they were recycled by the companies that supply the oil and they ended up on the tables of people who are eating them.
Wait, what was the oil originally intended to be used for? To feed pigs or to grease them down?
I believe it's pig slop, basically. Pig slop.
So wait, what kind of oil did the people think they were getting?
Well, they thought they were getting fresh oil, but instead what was happening was, you know, after you eat hot pot, there's a big pile of funky oil sitting at the table, right? And so that oil then gets taken and stored in a separate part of the restaurant where they put it into barrels, and it's picked up then either that night or the morning by those guys, you know, the old guys in blue mouse suits that ride around on bikes. Anyway, so they pick it up, and they take it to somewhere to either be, we're actually not sure what happens to that oil now. But originally, what people believed was that oil was pig slop, basically. But what happened was that oil was being resold back to the companies who supply oil to hot pot restaurants and was used again on hot pot tables. And that's why people were tripping, because they're like, whoa, wait a minute, this oil
I didn't realize the cycle went all the way around like that, because when I heard it was old oil, I thought what they meant was that they were just taking the oil, taking it into the back, taking the strainer ladle, pulling all the crap out of it, and then putting it back out on the table. But you're saying it actually left the restaurant, went to a third party, and presumably they strained all the gunk out of it, and then they sold it back to the restaurants. And the restaurants may not have even known that it was reused oil.
That's unclear, but according to the Chinese media and to... according to the Chinese media,
they didn't know.
They didn't. Some restaurants didn't know. Some restaurants are actually, like, for example, they eventually released a list of 13 companies that were responsible for this.
You talking about? I thought it was 13 specific hot pot restaurants.
No, right? It's companies.
Oh, and people who are selling the oil.
That's an important point, because some of the hot pot restaurants are actually groups now. They're actually limited companies that have more than restaurant. They actually supply their own food. They supply their own oil.
They're vertically integrated.
Exactly.
We're keeping that bit.
So some of these vertically integrated shops were, you know, within their system, within their companies, they were reusing that old oil.
They were selling it to themselves.
Mm. And some people and some companies that were listed do not have shops. They're actually, like Gufeng, for example, the big one that everyone was pointing at, does not run hot pot shops per se. There might be people involved with it, who knows, but they are an oil, they sell oil, cooking oil, and they've been implicated in this scandal as well.
Well, I mean, you got to assume the restaurants knew. If they were paying whatever price they were paying for original clean oil,
exactly.
Then all of a sudden they're like, you can have this delicious, clean, healthy oil, or this other cheaper, delicious, also clean, wink, wink, healthy oil. Do you think they knew? Do you think the restaurants knew?
I think they did. I mean, I think if they didn't know, then they must have had some kind of inkling, I'm guessing. There must have been suspicion.
Yeah, I mean, any hot pot seller who knows this stuff knows what good oil looks like.
If on price alone, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I imagine, like, when the distributor of the oil brings it to the hot pot restaurateur, he opens up the big barrel and dips his finger in, you know, and then licks it.
Doesn't Willy Wonka do that or something like that?
That's a
and knows concern. Right away, oh, this oil came from this particular rapeseed plant out in...
I got a question. Because I had heard before that the oil was reused, and that didn't, like, really...
I heard that, too. I was kind of under the understanding that this was just kind of customary practice.
Right, exactly. Big whoop. It's reusing. I mean, did we always know that there were potential health threats, or is there some sort of new science that indicates...
I think there is new science, actually, which indicates that it has a direct link to cancer.
What sort of cancer? Not the good kind. The bad kind, right?
Any kind is bad kind. Basically, it kills your cells, you know.
Whoa.
I heard that too. That's what I heard too. Can anyone, is there a doctor here that can confirm that?
Hello, this is Dr. Let
me put Look, on my I'm just, line. I'm not comfortable coming out against cancer quite yet.
Not all the facts
the
have been
jury,
released
the
yet.
The jury's still out. Can we teach intelligent design? Let's teach the debate. Stomach cancer then.
Some kind of cancer, certainly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any kind of cancer is bad. We know it's bad.
Right. But, I mean, the way this story emerged, was it like... all of a sudden, we realize, oh shit! We've known all along that this was really dangerous and hazardous to your health, and now all of a sudden we realize that people are doing it. Or was it like we've been doing this all along, and then oh my god, we just realized this is hazardous to your health?
I think basically what happened, what really triggered the whole the whole shitstorm. I'm gonna have to change that word, huh? What really triggered the whole
it's a podcast, bitches?
What triggered the whole storm was a. Was a undercover reporter, a TV reporter, who filmed the oil from table to back room, and then instead of going into the sewage or into into waste as it should have gone, it went into it was actually sold to it was taken back to the same company that resells it for recycling and resale back to the company, and that's what really triggered it. Who knows if it was if it's normal practice. It probably is normal practice, and people have been eating shitty oil. People have been eating cancer oil for years. There were rumors back in the day that Chongqing was popping opium into their hot pot, and those were rumors back 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite possible that they had bad oil. But when you finally see it, when you finally see exactly what's what you're eating, people then that's when you get the outcry.
Right.
I was under the understanding that it was just a recent thing. Because what I heard from people outside the country, I have a friend in Singapore that contacted me and said, don't eat hot pot because we know now that the hot pot oil is not safe in most of Chengdu's hot pot restaurants. I figured that if it had always been that level of danger that he would have said, we're all going to die of cancer or something like that.
He saw it on TV. The thing is what is likely, I think what is most likely, is that this has been going on for a long time. Everyone who does test the oil, sell the oil, buy the oil, is in on it, and that's why it never came to light. All of a sudden, this journalist researched and broke the story, and that's when they were forced to make a test that was objective. They were forced to make a real test. I mean, just because the reason this is coming to light is not because of a test; it's because of the reporter who did an undercover investigation into the oil and found out that it was being recycled instead of buying new oil.
Right.
And that's why it came out. So we have no idea how long it's been going on, but, it could have been going on since day one. Hot pot was ever made hot,
Before I ever heard about this story and before I heard that it was bad, someone had mentioned to me when we were eating hot pot that the oil was reused. And it was like, they were like, that's what all the flavor is.
Yeah, exactly. I heard the same thing too.
It was like, this is just the way we do things. So maybe the revelation was a scientific one. Maybe the journalist, brought to the forefront this information that it was potentially carcinogenic, as well as the fact that the general practice has been to reuse the oil. And that brought it to everyone's attention. All of a sudden, people want to pretend like they cared. Where all along, presumably, if they've been doing it on a large scale, the people who are in charge of food safety and standards already were aware that this was taking place. And the people in the restaurant industry already knew. I mean, if people, our friends, knew, then people knew.
Yeah, and nobody cared. Because, in a broader context, China is in a transition phase between all sorts of things like that. I mean, their Food and Drug Safety Administration is faulty on every front. I mean, we hear about a different scandal every day. This is the type of story, it's great work by the journalists. This is the type of story that will actually change practices. Before, they never changed practices because they don't give a fuck.
Good point.
And now,
as this whole thing's been going on, I've been looking across the street from my house, and I live across from the biggest hot pot restaurant in Chengdu, probably, Lao Mato in Yulin.
Mm-hmm.
And the business has been booming this entire week.
Yep.
Every night I look out the window, there's always people standing outside the door of the restaurant,
yep,
waiting to get inside.
Yeah.
So I really don't think that this has had much of an adverse effect on business, surprisingly. I've also noticed that there have been signs outside hot pot restaurants that say, our promises to their customers that our oil is safe, you're safe to eat here,
right,
trying to allay their concerns. But I'm surprised to see so many people outside the hot pot restaurant. I honestly thought that it would be difficult for hot pot restaurants to attract their normal amount of customers.
Yeah.
With this reaching such a mainstream level.
People love that hot pot, though.
I'm telling you. On my lady was just telling me that there's a bunch of people on her little web network that were talking about the scandal.
You mean Adult Friend Finder?
No. And punk bitch. Anyway, the network she's on, the people were talking about the scandal, and they said that, you know, yeah, they're aware that there might be a problem. Sure, they've been using recycled oil. It's probably cancerous. But they went and, but they were like, we have to eat hot pot. What are we going to do without hot pot? And they went and ate it anyway. And, you know, that's why you have such a high rate of cancer in this country.
So they're aware of the dangers and they just said, screw it. Let's go anyway.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you,
yeah, they're, that's exactly what the post said.
I'll give
we're
you
aware
a
of
comparison.
The dangers. We're going anyway.
I'll give you a comparison. Last year in America, a couple years ago, research indicating that barbecue, very carcinogenic. People overcook their food, all those little particles of charcoal accumulate, you eat them, increases the rates of cancer significantly, or significantly enough to consider it a health risk.
That makes sense. Shock causes the same way too, right?
Yeah. And are people going to stop barbecuing? No.
Yes. No.
No. Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's already lots of other facets of our life where people clearly choose to overlook risk to their health just because they enjoy doing stuff.
All
that's
right.
Good. Okay, moving along.
How about we move on to the next topic, which is the spy network in Chengdu. News has emerged that there was a Canadian group of researchers in Ottawa who discovered that there is a Chengdu-based group of saboteurs,
hackers.
Computer hackers. And specifically, they have hacked the Dalai Lama's email over the last year. And apparently a bunch of consulates also, including the U.S. consulate.
It seems to fit into what's been going on recently, you know, after Google stepped out and said that they were being hacked. You know, they a lot of different organizations probably stepped in and started researching where these hacks were coming from. They realized it was coming from a university in China. They couldn't make any government ties to it. And then it just kind of, the story just kind of like, you know, petered out for a while. So that's, you know, it seems to be something that if you know that move by Google might have initiated a industry-wide investigation into hackers, and that might be where this information started. You know, is that they did an investigation, found out, you know, they've been hacking all sorts of things, and they're based here in Chengdu.
I'm sort of curious what the contents of the email was. Subject header, regarding saffron robes. I prefer the Egyptian cotton. The American processed cotton chafes under my armpits.
Well, when we were talking about this previously, what you mentioned a motivation, Sasha, what do you think that is?
A motivation for the hackers?
Yes.
You know, if you think just on basic motivations for anyone to do a project of this size, you would think either you would think money. You know, I think their motivation is possibly money, and if it's money, who would be paying them? And I don't think any group of elite hackers would hack into consulates and into, 15,000 different Dalai Lama emails just on a lark or just because they could. They were probably being paid, or they were probably ordered to do so, or they got a project to do so.
By who?
You know, who else would do it? You know, I mean, I think we don't have any evidence, but you know, it's something that you know, but you don't know.
I get a question.
You know, who else would back something like that? Who else would benefit? I mean, you look at who benefits
from
this information.
I think the international audience is looking to see if the government steps up and says, we're going to bust these guys or we're on your side. Or, I mean, people are looking to see what their reaction is.
Well, then they're fools.
Well, no, I mean, they can be curious. I mean,
they're naive fools.
Well, not for having that expectation. I mean, they might not get the response from the Chinese government that they want, but they're not naive to expect it. The Chinese government is going to step up and say something. They're just not going to say exactly that. They're going to say, well, we're going to look into it. We have people on the case. We'll get back to you. I have a question, though, regarding the motivations of the hackers. And that is, I agree, money is probably the motivation. That said, do we think that these hackers are entrepreneurial, you know, speculators? That they've just gone and hacked out this information because they believe that they will be able to later sell it on the market? Or were they specifically contracted beforehand, and do they work under the direct supervision of you know, these shadowy figures?
Well, the thing is there was an article I read recently, and I can't remember exactly who wrote it, and that's unfortunate. But they were talking about, you know, various ways in which the Chinese government influences opinion and practices espionage.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is, for example, the Wu Mao Dan, you know, the Five Mao Party. What that is that's a bunch of hired people who go on to, you know, chat rooms and BBSs and blogs and
podcasts.
Podcasts.
Root out subversive thought.
Yeah, basically what they do is they turn public opinion with, you know, pro-government comments.
Narrative.
Exactly. They change the agenda. Now, those people are mercenaries in a way. They're kind of like proxies or auxiliary,
mm-hmm.
you know, espionage weapons. They're not necessarily trained spies coming out of, you know, a spy school.
Right.
These are just regular people who are paid, you know, however much.
They're just salaried internet commenters, right?
Exactly.
Right. And
now, these hackers could be that type of a group where they are, you know, where the government, where they know that these guys are highly skilled hackers. They can get into, you know, Dalai Lama's email, for example, and they may or may not pay them a monthly salary or something like that, or support them with a lab. But everyone's aware of what they do, and if they get anything important,
right.
That information has a, you know, clear pipeline down which it goes, and there's a, you know, a pipeline going the other way filled with cash, money, and women, you know, that, you know, as a reward. I think the response is diplomatically to expect the Chinese government to do something. And sure, maybe they'll bust these guys, maybe they'll release a comment. But basically, to assume that the Chinese government is not spying on you, is just because they say they're not, is is just foolish. You know, every government spies on every other government.
Yeah, and I think that the U.S. does the same sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, for example, back in 2001, I believe it was, or 2002 in April,
mm-hmm.
The spy plane incident. You remember that when the American spy plane cruised through Hainan, was clipped by Wang Wei, you know, the heroic Chinese fighter pilot. Do you remember that?
I do not.
I don't either. What happened?
That was a you know, a momentous issue. What happened there was an American spy plane. You know, there's no question about it. It was a spy plane. What they do is they do routine flights off of the Chinese coast.
Was it a piloted plane or?
Yeah, it was a piloted plane filled with electronics experts, you know, listening experts, computer experts. It was filled with spies.
Surveillance equipment.
It was an absolute clear spy plane. So what it did was they do routine flights off the coast of China. Now in the past, China didn't do much about it because they couldn't do much about it. But
don't they have control over the airspace?
Sure, but what are they going to do? You know, really, we're talking really here. Are they going to attack the plane? Are they going to... What they did was they repeatedly, before this incident happened, this happened in April of 2002, I believe. And so in February, they said, look, stay out of our airspace. Because every country has, you know, I think an economic airspace of around 200 miles and the actual airspace for any type of flight is around 75 miles. They have to contact the government that they're coming in.
I would expect them to do the same thing the United States would do, which is to try and contact the aircraft, and if they can't identify it, then get it to turn around. And if they don't do that, then they'll shoot you down after a certain amount of space.
Exactly, and that's exactly what happened. What happened was they contacted this plane, you know, repeatedly. And what happened was two Chinese fighter pilots were scrambled, and this had happened before. Like spy planes such as this one had gotten close to the Chinese coast. And fighter jets were scrambled, and they tailed the plane. They also, like, you know, zoomed in close on the plane, you know, basically let the plane know they were unwanted. This particular pilot, Colonel Wang Wei, was known by the American military for being particularly aggressive with his plane. And so this did not happen in a vacuum. This happened, you know, of events.
So what happened?
Happened was Wang Wei, you know, tried to zoom in on the plane, tried to buzz the spy plane, clipped it,
mm-hmm.
clipped the spy plane. Wang Wei crashed and died. The spy plane had to take an emergency landing in Hainan. So he landed in Hainan. Big incident, you know. I mean, the whole world knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chinese government then took the plane, and I think there were 9 or 11 passengers on board, and held them for roughly a week, I think it was, mm-hmm. you know, and during this period of time, the governments were probably having, you know, all sorts of conversations behind closed doors, and there were public, you know, statements by both saying, you know, this is a spy plane, you know, we can do whatever we want with it. The American government was, we want our plane and our people back, you know, so on and so forth. Eventually, what happened was the Chinese government gave the plane back in pieces. They took the plane apart. But anyway, so to come back to the point, like, this is, you know, they've been spying on each other forever, you know, and the Americans said repeatedly that this was a routine operation. They weren't spying, that this is, you know, they were
It's
just,
a routine operation. Were spying on you as part of our routine.
They were listening. You know, they came with a bunch of shit to basically say that we're not spying. But everyone knows what they were doing. Now, this particular group that China has, you know, this group found in Chengdu, you know, hey, they were, you know, a rogue group of, you know, crazy hackers who decided to hack politically sensitive things that are, you know, that can help benefit the CCP's, you know, international agenda.
I heard that one of their group has close connections to the science and technology university in Chengdu.
Yeah.
So there's some university connections there, apparently.
Well, you know, Chengdu is a has been a base for electronics, aeronautics, nuclear warheads, space technology for 50 years. Like, this is Chengdu and Sichuan is the base for high-tech, innovative military technology since Mao Zedong. What happened was Mao Zedong took all of his sensitive stuff, all his, you know, important technology, and moved it inland. And one of the major places, one of the major destinations for, you know, fighter planes for...
Right, there's actually a J-10 fighter called the Chengdu.
Yeah, it was designed here. You know, there's a lot of Pakistani pilots here. And they work together with the PLA, testing planes, designing planes, you know, so on and so forth. So, you know, one of the biggest design firms for bridges and is here in Chengdu. You know, one of the biggest aeronautic institutes is here in Chengdu. Electron, you know, the Dianzi Keda, the university we're talking about, science technology university, is one of the best science technology universities in the country. So to think, you know, it's not ridiculous to think that there's a group of hackers here that, you know, are skilled enough to get into anything. There's a historical basis for it.
Well, the third topic we were going to talk about was water contamination and the drought, which is taking place in Yunnan province right now.
Mm-hmm.
And this has come to a head recently because our water got turned off for a day.
Uh-huh.
Was that last week? When was that? Did you guys notice that?
Did not notice that.
Yeah, I did. That was, let me see, today's, that was Saturday.
How long was it turned off for?
All day, pretty much.
Really?
From
11 to 11:30
yeah.
p.m.
I did right. not realize that.
Yeah, it was turned off. There were a few reasons for it. The main reason I got via text message, I received a text message from the Ministry of Water, I suppose it would be called, you know. They sent me a text. They sent, I suppose everybody got this. I got it. My lady got it. A text message saying, you know, water's going to be turned off until 11:30 p.m. tonight. Some waste was dumped into the Songmu River, which is near Dujiangyan, which is where all of where a lot of Chengdu's water comes from. The whole, you know,
right.
Libing, you know, Dujiangyan, that's where all the water comes from.
Right.
For thousands of years, it's been coming from Dujiangyan. So anyway, some waste went into the water supply up there, and so they closed it off as an emergency tactic to kind of, you know, make sure that the water here stays safer than it normally is. But they said that it wasn't drinking water, it was water used for other things. But and so that's the text message I received on Saturday, was that the water was turned off for those reasons.
So what was the waste that was dumped to the river? Do you know? Was it garbage or was it something else?
They said garbage. You know, they didn't say they said it was a garbage a waste management facility that dumped something into the river.
So I heard that several people got incarcerated, I think, for this, right?
I didn't hear anything about
it. I heard there were two or three people that were arrested and I think in prison or standing on trial.
Where'd you hear that?
I think I heard that in the news, actually, online. Because obviously citizens are looking for people to take responsibility for this. I'm sure that the government knows, I mean, and people know that someone is going to take a fall for this. There has to be a blame on somebody. So I think there's two or three people that have been implicated in this specifically. because obviously this is against the rules, right? This is not normal practice. Someone broke the rules here, and it's a pretty egregious violation to have cut off the water in Chengdu for 10 hours, or 12 hours.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the water from Sichuan is considered a source of water for the rest of the country. Like a lot of water from here, like there's big plans to transport water from here to other places like Ningxia and Beijing, even, you know, that far, and Shanghai, because this place has a lot of water. And so they're probably, you know, if something happens to the water here, it might not just affect Chengdu, you know, it could eventually affect, you know, other you know, bigger, more important cities in the nation, you know, who knows. But, you know, China just has a water issue anyway. There's a book by Vaclav Smil, that's his name, and it was called The Coming Catastrophe, I believe. And it's about, and it deals a lot with, you know, the contamination of water in China. And, you know, anyone who lives here has walked along any waterway knows that the water here is filthy and polluted and contaminated, and you can't drink the water that comes out of your faucet. If you do, you know, you've got Lord knows what, you know, brewing in your tummy, and you'll have cancer in 20 years. So everyone here, you know, drinks either boiled water or bottled water, you know, because the water here is filthy.
How about if you get outside the city, if you get into the country, there's no clean water here? Really? Because I remember in Yunnan, I was in, I think, Dali.
Well, that's a different story out there.
Yeah, and the people there told me that the tap water there is cleaner than the bottled water here.
That could be true, you know, because Yunnan is on a plateau. It's a higher elevation. You know, here all the poo, all the nasty stuff, you know, Chengdu's in a basin. So like the water that comes to us has to go through, you know, every city in Sichuan before it gets here, you know, pretty much, you know, comes down from the mountains. And so, yeah, the water here is probably, you know, pretty nasty, but there's a lot of it. Because you have mountains, you know, you're surrounded by mountains. And
right.
Yunnan, the water is probably cleaner, but the difference is there that if they have any issues, if they have any water issues, like if it doesn't rain or if if it doesn't rain upriver, they'll have droughts like they're having now. Whereas Chengdu will probably be fine no matter what.
Interesting. The first day that I noticed that the water had been turned off, I tried to take a shower in the afternoon and it didn't work. I asked my roommate what happened, and he told me that it was because of the drought. There's been a really serious drought going on for months and months and months now in Yunnan province. So there's a major concern over their crops and livestock, which are not getting any water at all. And he told me that what he had heard was that water had been cut off in Chengdu to redirect it towards Yunnan. But it wasn't until several days later that it was revealed that that was not the case.
You know, that could also be the case.
It seemed really plausible.
Yeah, I mean... I didn't hear anything about that. Who knows? You know, I mean, this country is so filled with misinformation and misdirection. You know, in terms of what the public gets to hear and does not get to hear, that it's really sometimes very difficult to know what is and what is not going on. But yeah, there's a big drought that's not just in Yunnan but also in southern Sichuan, because southern Sichuan has the same climate, the same elevation. You
it's
know?
Like Panzhihua, that area.
Probably stops right around Panzhihua. Like the plateau starts around Xichang and keeps going up all the way to Dali and then starts going back down again. So, you know, yeah, it has similar climate, and anything that affects, you know, parts of Yunnan will probably affect parts of southern Sichuan too. But up here, the closer you get to Dujiangyan and the Yangtze River, you know, the less of a problem water supply becomes.
Well, we've covered these three topics, so I think we can pretty much wrap it up from here.
All right.
My name is Eli Sweet.
I'm Sasha Matuzak.
And I'm Charlie Mosley. Thanks for listening. Check us out on chengduliving.com.